You're listening to Mornings with Gary Byron, the Republican voice of reason, only on the Talk of Connecticut Radio Network.
Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is a Brooklyn native who has been called the nation's most peripatetic civil liberties lawyer and one of the most distinguished defenders of individual rights. Other comments about him over the years, the best-known criminal lawyer in the world, the top lawyer of last resort, America's most public Jewish defender, and Israel's single most visible defender, the Jewish state's lead attorney in the court of public opinion. Good morning, it's Gary Byron, 9/11 here on this Free-for-All Friday. His new book is entitled War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarianism. He is a frequent Fox News Channel contributor, and just off of his appearance just last night on Sean Hannity's show, let's welcome to the show Alan Dershowitz. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. You know, I come from Brooklyn, but I was educated in Connecticut.
So, oh, really? Look at where?
Yale Law School, to which I will never contribute another penny until they do a reckoning as to how they're dealing with their students who have essentially joined forces with terrorist organizations like Hamas. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a fifth column among American law students, and finally, 60 law firms have written a letter to Yale Law School, to Harvard Law School, where I taught for 50 years.
You're an emeritus. That's right. You're a professor emeritus over at Harvard.
Yeah.
How has that changed your viewpoint towards that Ivy League university?
Well, I think it's done a disgraceful job in failing to see moral clarity. What we have are a group of fifth column people at Yale and Harvard Law School. If there were ever terrorist attacks in the United States, and this is a very strong statement, but I stand by it. If there were a terrorist attack in the United States against American citizens, against synagogues, against schools, against you name it, there are students at Harvard and Yale today that would join the terrorists. That would become fifth column opponents of America. That would help kill Americans on behalf of Hamas, a designated terrorist organization. That's how bad it has become.
Right.
A student who was on the Harvard Law Review the other day led a group of people harassing a Jewish student who wouldn't let him out, according to some reports, knocked him to the ground. I haven't seen any responses from Harvard, from Yale, that are sufficient to counteract this. Finally, a bunch of law firms have said, enough's enough. We're not going to hire your students if you don't do something to stop this anti-Semitism. And some people say, oh, students will be students. No, no, no. Hitler emerged as a result of student support at the University of Munich. They burned books, then they ended up by burning people.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you give students a pass, students were the ones who gave great support to the Ayatollahs to bring about the change in Iran. Students were the ones who supported Stalin. And as I said, Hitler. So, you know, we're talking about people who are the equivalent of Hitler Youth here, who hate America, who hate Jews, who hate Israel, who are holding signs saying gas the Jews or clean America of Jews.
That's so let me ask you, should these rallies be illegal? I mean, they're talking and promoting violence. And that's juxtaposed against the First Amendment. But isn't hate speech illegal?
No, hate speech is actually legal as long as it doesn't incite. There is another provision. That is, it's against the law to provide material support for a designated terrorist group, which includes Hamas and Hezbollah. And I think some of these students have come close to providing material support. I believe they would provide material support if they could. And so this is a very serious problem for the future of America, because these are our future leaders. 10 years from now, they'll be in Congress. They'll be in the editorial rooms of the New York Times, at big law firms, at big hedge funds. And so unless we confront this problem directly now, we're in for a very dark future. Remember, you scratch an anti-Semite and an anti-Israel person, and you don't have to scratch very deep. You find anti-American, anti-Judeo-Christian tradition. These are people who hate what we are. Remember, they attacked Israel before Israel ever fired a single shot.
That's right. I said that earlier.
Israel showed any weakness on October 6th, 7th. As soon as they showed any weakness, these bullies saw blood.
All right, so Anna, let me ask you this. How has this war changed the relationship between Israel and the United States, especially with regard to the possibility of direct American intervention?
Well, I hope there won't have to be direct American intervention. I think the United States should support Israel and together destroy Iran's nuclear reactor. That would help Israel. That would help the Middle East. That would help the United States. But at the moment, all Israel needs is America's diplomatic support. What it doesn't need is to be lectured about civilian casualties. Remember that when the Iraq war, in which we fought against a distant terrorist group, Al-Qaeda and other groups, they were not endangering the United States directly. They were not just a few miles away from our shores. And between 270 and 320,000 civilians were killed. Whereas in Israel, the numbers are probably in the low thousands of actual civilians who are being used as human shields. So I don't think the United States should be lecturing Israel about civilian casualties when Israel has done at least as good a job, proportionately,
than
any other democracy in the world has ever done.
So should the U.S. put boots on the ground now or wait till it gets to be two or three or even a forefront war?
I hope it never has to put.
Well, but you're looking at Hezbollah but you're looking at Hezbollah right now.
Right.
And
Israel has the capacity. Look, Israel has the ability to destroy Hezbollah and Hamas. The problem is it will result in civilian casualties. That's Hamas's and Hezbollah's fault because they put their fighters and their rockets in civilian areas. People's homes in southern Lebanon have rockets in their basements, and Israel has entitled to destroy those rockets to prevent attacks on civilians.
Okay.
So the United States has to understand there will be civilian casualties, and every civilian who dies is the fault of Hamas. Let me give you an example, a common sense example. I rob a bank, and I take you as a hostage, and the police are shooting at me, and I'm shooting and killing people in the bank, and the policeman takes aim at me, the hostage taker, but accidentally kills the hostage. Who's guilty of murder? Not the policeman. I'm the one who's guilty of murder. I'm the one who held the hostage. And that's why Hamas and Hezbollah are guilty of murdering every one of the civilians that Israeli rockets kill if they're being used as human shields. And we have to understand that common sense argument. And the United States should not be on the forefront of telling Israel what to do. Look, the world represents and accepts strength. If you want Israel to make peace, let it destroy Hamas. Benefits from strength, and it loses when it shows weakness, as it did on October 7th when it was victimized. That's when the anti-Semitism started.
So with civilians in mind, Alan, if Israel has to morally take care to not kill civilians, can they still win?
Well, they have to balance. They have to strike a balance. And, you know, the law of proportionality, the law of war says
they can win.
You can kill civilians in the process, and it's the fault of the people who are taking human shields. And so I hope the world will understand that.
Has Israel considered its nuclear option as a last resort to assure its survival?
It always has a nuclear option, but you can't drop a nuclear bomb in a neighboring area because the radiation would affect Israelis. But it would use a nuclear bomb against Iran.
Yeah, Iran, right.
To threaten it.
Yeah, that was my next question.
With nuclear attack. I hope it never comes to that. You know, in the 1973 war, there were considerations of the possibility of dropping a nuclear bomb somewhere in an empty field just to show the enemies what could be done. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope Israel's conventional forces, as they have been doing so far, just can be left alone to do what they have to do. They surround Gaza City. They're going to destroy the tunnel, which are used as terror tunnels. I wrote a book called Terror Tunnels a few years ago, which dealt with those. I was one of the first civilians ever allowed into a terror tunnel. I literally went under Gaza in a terror tunnel and saw it. And it was quite remarkable, the technology that was borrowed from North Korea and other areas in Asia to help build this technology. But it's very hard to defeat an enemy who's underground. And their tunnels are under hospitals, under mosques, under schools, in order to use the schools and the mosques and hospitals as human shields. We know that right after these attacks occurred in October, the Hamas terrorists ran to the hospital and hid in the Sheba hospital underground and induced basically Israel to say, look, either you leave us alone or you're going to kill civilians. That's a choice to which no democracy should have to be put.
I want to go back to something that you said at the top of the interview and going back to the students on campuses. I mean, this war has revealed dangerous attitudes among America's future leaders, as you call them. You're right. They are going to be in the legislatures, in the Congress, in press rooms. But right now it's on today's college campuses towards Israel's, possible destruction. Why, though? Why are we experiencing this? Why are Ivy League universities and most colleges, why are they teaching revisionist history?
Well, what happened is after the killing of George Floyd, which was inexcusable by a policeman, all these schools did a reckoning, and they changed their curriculum, they changed their admission policies. They created these bureaucracies based on so-called diversity and inclusion and equity, which abolished diversity, intellectual diversity, in favor of just racial diversity. And the inclusion excluded Jews and excluded Christians. And it turned many of these schools into propaganda mills. And the educational quality of schools like Harvard and Yale have been diminished tremendously over the last few years. I taught at Harvard for 50 years. I went to Yale. I went to New York City University. Those schools today are propaganda mills. And students, you know what they're doing? They're not taking courses in government. They're not taking courses in history. They're taking courses in science and technology where they can't be propagandized. But these schools have spent enormous amounts of money just on propaganda. And donors are beginning to push back. I will never contribute another penny to Yale, to Harvard, or to City College of New York, where I went, until and unless there's a reckoning for how they're dealing with their anti-Americanism, anti-Judeo-Christian, how they're becoming part of the problem rather than part of the solution.
Well, we're not just seeing it on universities. We're seeing it, we're seeing a definite media bias in regards to the level of support the U.S. gives to Israel. What is the goal or aim, if you will, of the media on both sides?
Well, remember who these media people are. They're people who ran the Harvard Crimson and the Yale Daily. And the Harvard Crimson and the Yale Daily have been their Der Sturma of the anti-Semitic campaigns. They have railed against Jews. And if you're going to train them at the Yale Daily and at the Harvard Crimson, by the way, I have taken the position that these newspapers should not be able to use the name Harvard or Yale. They should be called the Daily and the Crimson, because they don't represent Harvard or Yale. They don't represent the attitudes of the school. They're just a bunch of kids who got a lot of money from alumni. I hope the alumni begin cutting off money to these newspapers, because these newspapers, again, are propaganda mills. They don't present one side of the story. The Yale Daily made them cut out a statement that said basically that Hamas raped and beheaded people, saying, no, nobody's ever been able to prove that. Prove it. They have shown photographs of babies without heads burned alive. But for the Yale Daily News, that wasn't good enough. So the Yale Daily News censored news reports so that they become pro-Hamas and pro Palestine and anti-Israel. So when you train these kids at the Yale Daily and at the Harvard Crimson, what do you expect from them? The New York Times and CNN hires them, and they continue their anti-American, anti-Judeo-Christian, anti-Semitic biases. That's going to be the future.
So I'm listening to you, Alan, and I'm thinking of the Smith-Mundt Act, and I thought it was illegal to propagandize the American people.
Well, it's illegal to give material support to terrorist groups. And it is also illegal for government, for universities that accept money from the government, which means all major universities, to engage in anti-Semitism. And so there are lawsuits now. I'm helping on these lawsuits.
Good.
I'm spending a lot of time advising students. Students don't want to pay their tuition. They want their tuition back. Donors want their contributions back. They don't want their money to be used against America, against Jews, against Israel. That's not why they gave the money. They gave the money to teach science. not to propagandize. And donors are having a real revolt. And fortunately, some schools are taking that seriously. In my book, The War Against the Jews, which, by the way, you can advance order now
on Amazon.
Amazon.com. Yep. It'll be out very shortly. I go through all of these issues in great detail. I name names. I talk about universities. I talk about how this fifth column is emerging in America. And again, I want to say, if terrorism comes to America, there are students at Harvard and Yale who would join the terrorists. That's how bad it has become.
All right. Our guest, by the way, 25 minutes after the hour of 9, it's Gary Byron. Our guest is Alan Dershowitz, who the aforementioned book, War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarianism. We just heard the president of the United States, Alan, call for a humanitarian pause. I'm sure you heard this. Yep. Then we see Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday, who said this country will not settle for a ceasefire. How do you feel about a ceasefire, and what would it mean in regards to the war? Because Netanyahu just said it would constitute a surrender for the Israelis. Would it be?
Can you imagine if the United States declared a ceasefire right after 9/11 or right after Pearl Harbor? Of course not. You don't fight a war half-assed. You do it completely. Total war, Churchill said. Total war, Roosevelt said. We won the total war. Japan and Germany surrendered, and they became our allies. You know, enemies respect strength, not weakness. Israel's, the greatest anti-Semitism came right after Israel was victimized. And if Israel shows strength, it will achieve peace. You know, it's interesting, the Bible, the Psalms of David, say God will promise the Jewish people strength, and only then will they get peace. There'll only be peace through strength. Weakness encourages attacks and warfare. Hamas has already said they will attack. We're waiting to hear a speech from Nasrallah, who's the Hitler of our time, who would like nothing more than to destroy the Jewish people if he could. And whether he'll call for war or something short of war, we don't know. But Israel, the United States, all Western democracies have to destroy Hezbollah. Hezbollah has destroyed Lebanon, has turned a peaceful country into a warmongering hellhole, the same thing that's happened to Hamas.
Well, I mean,
and so the Palestinian people would benefit enormously if Hamas were destroyed.
I mean, what do we do about Qatar? I mean, they're the ones housing the leaders of Hamas. Should there be consequences?
Well, right now, we have to be nice to Qatar. You know, I met the emir of Qatar at dinner with him, along with President Trump when he was president. And he tries very hard, the emir, to play both sides. And if he can help get the 242 hostages back, I'll praise him and congratulate him. But if he can't do that, why are Americans supporting Qatar? Why do we have an army base there? We could easily move it to Bahrain or some other place. So I think Qatar has to prove its worth by getting these people out of Gaza, where they're being held as illegal hostages. So let's wait and see if Qatar can come through.
I mean, you're so versed in this, and you have been for years. You're renowned. Yeah. You're respected all across the board. I'm gonna ask you the golden question here. Can there be peace between Israel and the Arab nations now?
Only through strength. Only if Israel totally destroys Hamas, then there'll be peace.
Peace
through
strength.
But if they show weakness, there won't be peace.
Well, if any good can come of this, and I'm talking, it's very, very little, but it has certainly united, you know, Israelis and Jews around the world as never before.
And Americans.
Well, American. This is despite,
American.
Deep divisions among them politically and religiously and even ideologically. Will this be the way forward now?
I hope so. I mean, that if something good can come out of this, it will be supporting Israel's destruction of Hamas and creating a situation that is possibly conducive to peace. But there won't be peace as long as there's Hamas.
Well,
thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I've got 1 minute, Alan. What's the future of the region right now?
Depending on whether Israel wins. If Israel wins a total and complete victory, the future of the region is bright. If Israel loses, the future of the region is very dark.
And my final question to you is, what would be your message to the youth of today in regards to the relationship between Israel and Palestine?
This is like the Second World War. The youth in the 1930s, many young people at Yale and Harvard supported Hitler. They were on the wrong side of history. Do not be on the wrong side of history. Understand that being on the side of Israel and the United States is the right side of history.
Can the IDF win the war?
Yes, absolutely, and they will, unless the United States and other countries interfere with their victory.
The name of the book is War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarian by Alan Dershowitz. You order it right now on Amazon.com. Alan, thank you so much for your valuable and precious time.